This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and for readers to enjoy a good book. Well, this is a special Thanksgiving edition of the program. In a little while, I'm going to be talking to one of my absolute favorite writers, Mary Higgins Clark. She's a wonderful woman and a wonderful, warm-hearted, and generous person. And over the years, she's been so generous to writers. And so I'm really happy to be able to bring her interview to you today. And I just want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And I hope that everybody, after all of this year of a political season, and everybody's been so stressed out, it is nice to know that we have this wonderful holiday of Thanksgiving, that we can sit down with our families and our friends and just love each other and be kind to each other and forget all the little crazy things that have happened over the years. And if you're not in the same political side or the same anything, whatever problems that have popped up over the years in your relationship, just forget about them. Thanksgiving is a time to be together and to be thankful that you are together, because you never know who's not going to be here next Thanksgiving Day. So take this time. If you're not with your family, pick up the phone and call everybody that you can think of and just say Happy Thanksgiving and make plans to get together with them during the year, because the years go quickly and you don't know what's going to happen. So it's always just, I think, you know, I've always loved Thanksgiving, partly because I love to cook and I go a little crazy. I overcook for days, but that's part of the fun that I've always found in it, being able to share my recipes. And many of them come down to me from my mother, who was a wonderful cook, and my grandmother. And I still have her rolling pin, so I can imagine that this rolling pin has rolled out so many pie doughs over the years. It's unbelievable. And that kind of little thing is so important. So look for the important things in your life. And often they are the little things, a rolling pin. That's all I've got left of my grandmother and a few faded photos. And all the memories of the wonderful things that she did for me, and the wonderful times that I spent with her, and all the funny stories. I just close my eyes and I remember what she was like and how much fun she was. She had a pet goat, and she was very funny. And she didn't speak much English, but when she did, she knew exactly what she always wanted to say. One of the things she always said was how happy she was that she was in America and that they left the old country. And she tried to learn English as well as she could, because she loves America and she wanted always to be thankful for being here, as we all should, because this is a land of opportunity and a land where we can do so many wonderful things. And you never know what life is going to bring you. Less than 2 years ago, I had no idea I'd be on the radio. And here I am today on the radio and having fun talking to all of my absolute dream authors, authors that I never thought I would get to talk to. And so you can do it too. And then perhaps you can do it through writing a book. So think about starting your book and writing. And now I'm going to go to talk to Mary in a few minutes. And then at the bottom of the hour after my interview with Mary, I'm going to be talking to a good friend, James McGee, who has written, I think over a dozen now of trivia books. And for anyone who loves trivia his books are just fantastic reads. So I just, again, want to thank everybody who has been so supportive this year. For some people know that it's been a difficult year for me, and I want to thank all of you. I appreciate all your emails, and I want to remind everyone, I have had so many wonderful guests this year, to go to my archive page at radio-joyonpaper.com and find your favorite author and listen to their interview, because it might inspire you to write. And it's there's nothing so wonderful, and that it is truly a joy to see your words on paper and to know that people are going to read them and maybe someday make a movie out of them and you will hear them spoken on screen. So just again, thank you all for supporting me over the year. Okay? And I want to thank Big Ed in the control room, because he finds everything for me, the music, and gets me organized. And thank Big Ed for everything that he does. And happy Thanksgiving to all of you. And now I just want to go and see if Mary's available. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay. It's so great for me to have you back on my program, Joy on Paper, because you are always a joy. And this is a special edition of my program for Thanksgiving, because as I've told you before, I'm always thankful for when your books come out, and as are all your readers and probably your publisher too.
Well, thank you very much. It's a delight to be with you around Thanksgiving, because it's my favorite holiday. Or maybe my second favorite over the Christmas holiday. But Thanksgiving is always so special. Right now we're getting the turkeys up and the Halloween candy down and getting ready for a big holiday.
And with your new book, Sleeping Beauty Killer, which I think is just a wonderful book and a perfect book for somebody to, you know, after on the Thanksgiving weekend, after the turkey, and you've got leftovers and you've got desserts left over, to sit with your book will be an absolute treat for any reader.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, we enjoy doing them all, but the books Alastair and I have written together, we were especially fond of this one. So I'm so glad it seems to be being very well received, which, of course, is a joy.
Well, as always, Sleeping Beauty Killer is suspenseful and keeps the pages turning. And I always love your scenes where you have a courtroom scene. And I don't know, did you go to courtrooms fairly often? Because you always capture that feel. And I always get, whenever you have a courtroom scene in one of your books, I'm always like, whoa. You know, it feels so real to me, and I'm waiting there for the jury to make a decision. And
well, I know what you mean. I used to go to trials all the time, and I got more DNA from trials than I can ever tell you. Now I can't go anymore because I'm recognized, and I don't want to be recognized. I just want to sit with all the ladies who bring their lunch with them and go to the interesting trials. So I can't do that anymore. And my daughter is a criminal court judge. And one day she had just charged the jury. And the alternate juror raised her hand and said, "Is it true your mother is Mary Higgins Clark?" And Marilyn said, "Yes, it is. But it has nothing to do with this case." And she said, "Well, I just want to get her autograph." And with that, one of the impaneled jury raised her hand and I said, "I want to get her autograph too." Marilyn said to me, "Stay out of my courtroom." But I did go often, and I made many, many notes on trials that I went to along the way. And I think I learned how to grab that moment where a story suddenly changes. Or a case 20 years ago when my daughter's high school friend was murdered. And when her brother got on the stand and they said, "You have a sister." And he said, "No, I had a sister." And just a little poignancy that comes up, a young man whose wife was murdered, and when they said, can you describe the engagement ring that you gave her? Because this guy had stolen it after he killed her, and I tried to hawk it. And he started describing it. He was English, and we bought it in England. And there were different stones in it, which was what she wanted. How many stones? He said, my wife was missing. My wife, I know, is dead. Do you think I care whether it was 14 or 16 stones in it? But it's that kind of thing that gives the ring of truth.
Well, I think it's exactly that kind of thing that makes your books so compelling.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Well, it's your job as a writer to make the books compelling and to never tell the same story twice and to keep everything fresh and have different backgrounds so that there is no sense of, it seems to me I read that song before.
Now, this is the third installment of the Under Suspicion series.
That's right. The first book in that series was one of my own. It was called I've Got You Under My Skin, and it concerned Laurie Moran, who is a young television producer, and her idea is to go to the people who have been under suspicion for a crime, even though they've never been charged, get them together on the program, and let them each tell his or her story about what happened that night and where they were. And the publisher liked that concept so much after having done the first one. They said, we want to continue the series with Laurie and Under Suspicion. But they said, we want one a year, but you may not want to write two books in 1 year by yourself. And I said, no, I honestly don't. So they said, we'll send you 5 books from different authors and their bios, and see if there is one of them you could choose as a co-writer. And the minute I read Alifair Burke, I said, she's exactly the one I want. She writes in the same tone as I do. She was a federal prosecutor and now teaches criminal law. And I have that certain background that I've learned over the years. And I thought we could write a good story together. So that the first one was, which one was the first? The Cinderella murder, and then All Dressed in White about a missing bride, and now the Sleeping Beauty killer. And they've been thankful, thanks be to the Lord, they've been very successful. And we just signed a contract for 2 more, so they'll keep going.
Well, they're great. I thought that was so clever that when you came out with the Laurie Moran storyline, It's great. You know, it really gives you a lot of openings for a lot of stories. And besides, she's just a character that is very likable and one that you want to know more about.
And you want things to be good for her.
Exactly.
I mean, that book opens when her husband takes the 3-year-old to the playground and suddenly a man appears with a gun in his hand and he says, you're welcome to my wallet. It's in my back pocket. And he said, I don't want your wallet, and kills him.
I know. That was such a shocking opening. It was, you know, there you have this man and his son in the park, and you know, it's such a lovely, just a vision to think about. And when he got shot, I was like, I was so shocked.
No, let him live, Lord. Let him live.
Yeah, I kept saying, oh, no, how did she open this book? So yeah, no, it was that one. I love that book. Well, as I said, I love all of your books because they are the kind of the only other suspense author that really won. You know, I think, you know, of course, Agatha Christie and a few others. You know, you can reread Carolyn Hart books. You can reread.
Very good. Yes.
And get them, you know, you have to wait a year or so, 2 years, and then you go back and read it again and you find more dimension to it. And that's a wonderful thing about your writing.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, it should be that there is depth to all the characters so that you see something in them that you didn't think you saw in the beginning. And I think that's a necessary part of writing. I know when I do my own books, I write and I rewrite and I rewrite the first 50 pages. I change the names of the character. No, she's not a little blonde. She's tall with dark hair. No, her name isn't that. That name doesn't fit her. This name fits her. So by the time I do those 50 pages over and over again, then I'm on my way. Now, with Alifair and me, we go into the editor's office, and we sit and we kick around ideas. She sometimes comes up with the skeleton, but then who did it, what they're like, where they work, what kind of people they are. And she writes the first version. I go over it and I write the second version. She writes the third version. I go over it, and then we put our heads together to say, okay, make the climax a little quicker. We're waiting too long. That kind of thing. So that when we turn in the book, we both feel it's the best story we can tell.
Well, you have done an amazing job. And as I said, I'm so happy that I'm going to be able to promote this on my Thanksgiving program and to tell everybody to go out there and buy it. And thinking of Thanksgiving, as you said, you love Thanksgiving, and so do I. Where were you raised?
Well, I was raised in the Bronx, and then lived in New York for a few years, and then moved out to New Jersey. Oh, my God, I was 28, so figure that out from 89. We'll be 89 next month. But I've been out here for a very long time. But Thanksgiving was always a big day, always. And right now, I was widowed and for long, many, many years ago, but I remarried 20 years ago. So I just put out the cattle call for everybody. John has 11 grandchildren, I have 6, and I have 5 children, he has 4. So the invitation is out for everybody, including some cousins, you know, nieces, nephews, that kind of thing. So we always end up with at least 31 people at the table. And those who have the other family to go to get over earlier or later. So it's always a very blessed Thanksgiving.
So, of course, you haven't written a Thanksgiving book yet, but you do have a Christmas book out.
Well, Carol and I wrote 5 together, and I wrote several Christmas books together. I mean, myself, where, of course, it's a different story. I mean, the one I wrote, Silent Night, was about a little boy who sees someone take his mother's wallet and follows it because his father is very ill. He has leukemia. And his father's medal when he was in World War II is in the bag, and he has to get it back and follows the woman and then is kidnapped. So that book was Silent Night, and I always thought that was a pretty good story.
It was, and I also like The Magical Christmas Horse.
Oh, yes, my Christmas book. Wendell Miner is an absolutely superb artist, and he does so many children's books. So he and I did 2 together, The Magical Christmas Horse, and what was the other one?
It's a beautiful cover with the white horse on it, and it's really fantastic.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a white horse like that. I bought it from my grandson many years ago, and it still is in a chair, in a place in the guest room. So when we were talking about it, I said, it has to be a white Christmas horse. Unfortunately, Wendell agreed with me.
Well, it is. It's a beautiful cover, and one that I'm going to have a special Christmas week where I promote books that I think people should buy for Christmas, and I know I'm going to recommend this one because I think it's lovely. It's a lovely story and a lovely book.
Well, you know what I write very often on the cover? Happy reading someday, because when they give me a name, I said, how old is the baby? Oh, she's a week old now. So I said, I think happy reading someday is the appropriate greeting to her.
Well, it's a wonderful book, and I'm going to promote it for Christmas, my Christmas list. And I want to just, before we go, because I know we're going to have a hard break, I want to talk a little bit about your Tuesday Club and how you like to work with other writers.
Well, we have a group that meets in New York. We like to meet once a month, the first Tuesday. That doesn't always happen because many of us are doing tours and that kind of thing. But we just all get together and talk. And I love it because it's, you know, what's going on, what's in the field, what we ourselves are doing. And I will give you one quick story. And that was one of them, one of the guys in it, said, I'm going to tell you all a quick story, and you are going to, from the top of your head, tell me the scariest sound. And he said, it's a dark night, a lonely island kind of place. You're alone in a big house. It's pitch black. The alarm is on. And the scariest sound. And I think we all did the usual, a shot, a scream, piercing glass. And he just smiled and he said, you're all wrong. And he did the scenario again, alone, dark, the alarm on. And he said, and the toilet flushes. That's scary.
Well, who is that? Who said that?
Warren, my gosh, I'm trying to think of his last name at the moment. He was a member of the club for many years, and Warren died a few years ago. But it's when
that's
the expected becomes unexpected.
Exactly. That is beautiful. And so, who are some of the other members of your group?
Well, Susan Isaacs, Linda Fairstein.
I love Linda Fairstein. She was on my program for her recent book, Killer Look.
Oh, Linda's great. Very smart. Of course, she had been a prosecutor, so she knows her stuff backwards, forwards, and upside down. So she's an excellent member to have at it. No, we have a very, very nice group that goes on, and sometimes four people can make it, sometimes ten. But we always try to keep it to the first Tuesday of every month so that we don't get away from it.
Well, last time I suggested that that's a good title and a good premise for a mystery story. A bunch of writers on Tuesday night, somebody gets killed.
Plot out a murder and then it happens.
Exactly. Yeah, it would be a good one, huh?
It would be an interesting thing. We all have maybe a reviewer who has not been kind to us, and we all decide that this one has to go. And then we plot it out carefully, and the next day we read in the newspaper that columnist is not with us any longer. Actually, it'd be kind of fun to do.
Well, maybe you have a plot for your next book.
Maybe we do. I remember when I was selling short stories, an editor at Red Book was always knocking whatever I sent in. And she wrote, after one novella I sent her, Mrs. Clark, your stories are light, slight, and trite.
ooh, she would have been a good candidate to knock off.
Yeah, and I just thought, I never got insulted. I thought, I'll get you, baby. I will get you. And I did. Years later, they wanted a story from me. And I said, I read that note and I said to my agent, make her pay.
Uh-huh.
So you don't get murdersome, but you get even one way or the other.
That's fun. So do you pay attention to reviews? Not anymore. I don't think you have to worry about reviews anymore.
Oh, we all want good reviews. That's an absolute given. And, you know, sometimes you get mixed. Sometimes you get very, very fine ones. But the big thing is that you want to tell a good story. And the critics are generally speaking, both very fair and very smart. So the big trick is to write a story where they say, you know, you'll enjoy it.
Well, I think with your books, that's almost always the case because they are just enjoyable. And I'm so happy that you came on today to talk about Sleeping Beauty Killer. And I know that it's going to be a big hit, as always. And what's your next book coming out?
The one that comes out for Mother's Day is called All By Myself Alone. A young woman who is a gemologist and lectures about jewelry and famous stories of jewelry.
Ooh, I love that.
She was just about to be married the night before at the rehearsal dinner. The FBI comes in and arrests the boyfriend, who it turns out is a massive fraud and cheating people, including many of her own friends whom she persuaded to invest. And now he says that she is also with them. She helped to plan the whole thing. So she gets on a ship to speak as a gemologist, and somebody dies on the ship. And she's suspected.
Uh-huh.
And then you take from there.
that's exciting. And that's something that we can all look forward to. And then meanwhile, everybody should go out and get Sleeping Beauty Killer. It's a wonderful read for over the Thanksgiving weekend and a perfect gift for anybody who enjoys reading a good book. And so it's an ideal gift to buy and to give to somebody. So I want to thank you so much, Mary Higgins Clark, for being on today. You know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And as you have certainly found the joy on paper after a few books that you've written. Huh?
Well, thank you, Patsy. And it's lovely to be with you today. So blessed and happy holidays to you and your readers.
Well, thank you again. And have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And hopefully you'll write a Thanksgiving book. And we'll talk about that next Thanksgiving.
It's a premise.
Okay, and then we'll definitely have you back on Mother's Day because I love gemologists. I took a few classes myself, and I love the subject. So I know that you're going to really make it a thrilling experience for your readers.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll give it my best try. I promise.
I know you will. Okay, happy Thanksgiving to you and to your entire family, and thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
An absolute pleasure.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side. Riverside on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
McGee, who has written a series of books that are just fantastic and perfect for anyone who loves trivia. You know, trivia is one of the most popular things going on nowadays. My son is in college and up there at the University of Wisconsin. He's doing his PhD program. And every week he goes to a trivia night. And in this area here in near Clearwater, Florida, we have dozens of places that have trivia nights. So if you really want to be honed up on all the knowledge that you need, you have to look at James McGee's site on Amazon, and they have a list of all of the books. And hi, James. It's nice to have you here.
Have me back.
Okay, and we also have your friend, Good Time Charlie. Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Charlie. Now, you've been on before, and it's been so much fun talking to you because, of course, Good Time Charlie has a very interesting background involved in taking people around and meeting lots of famous people. And I know, of course, your great interest in music. So tell us a little bit about recently you took a trip to...
Yeah, Cleveland. We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We stayed there at his younger sister's house. We spent the whole first day, the next day, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it covered all five floors. The first floor, it had Cleveland artists. And there was one artist because, Good Time Charlie's real name is Wesley. Wesley had a friend called Bucky, and he had a group called The Visions. And he's number one on the list in the Cleveland artists. From way back when, you know, and after we left that room, we started to go from the beginning of the exhibits. And the first one was pre-rock and roll, the roots, pre-rock and roll. Then we moved over to the roots. The actual roots was like Sun Records. And then the next room was a big room for Elvis. That's where it all started. Once we saw the... Elvis exhibit, you move on and you have Buddy Holly and the Everly Brothers because they were very close as friends. Matter of fact, when Buddy Holly passed away, Phil would help carry the casket at the funeral, Phil Everly. And then they had moved over to, you had the three artists that died at 27, Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Morrison, and Janis Joplin. There was a whole exhibit devoted to them. Then they had the early doo-wop groups that was followed by the Beatles and the Stones, which was the British Invasion. Then they did a whole, Sam Cooke. Didn't they do something on Sam Cooke?
Oh, yeah. Sam Cooke even had his original gospel group, Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers, before Sam crossed over.
Well, of course, that's a wonderful place for tourists to visit, a very interesting destination. And with your love of rock and roll and Motown, I was reading the Motown book that you've written. It's called Motown Female Rock and British Rock Trivia. And as I said, trivia is just such a popular thing nowadays. People are looking for something to do other than just surfing the net, something to do where they can have interaction with people. And I know that your books are just ideal. You've written books about many different subjects, James. What are some of, just name some of the subjects that you cover.
Shakespeare Unplugged. I wrote a book on legal terms. I wrote a book on the history of the novel, history of opera, history of drama, those three books.
I know I particularly love the brief history of European diplomacy. That's a fascinating little book. And it has so many details that are actually questions that they ask in these trivia games. So it's a wonderful book to read. Now, we're going to talk today about Motown and some of the songs that are mentioned in your book. What I like about this book is that it's a book where you have the question on one page, and right on the next page, if you turn the page, you have the answer. So you don't have to go searching through. I hate books where the questions are in the front, and then you have to go searching in the back of the book for the answers. So your book is very nicely done that way.
Yeah, actually, I have two books. You know, I wrote a book on Rock and Roll Review, which covered the years 1957 and 1961. And it does have, gives you a song and then gives you three groups to pick from. And then when you get the answer on the other side of the page, there's a lot of good trivia about that particular group.
Exactly.
Or singer.
Exactly. So let's play a song here, and maybe you can tell me about it. Ed, are you in there? It's going to play us a song. I love that song. Motown, boy, they captured a feeling. And it just puts a smile on your face. So who wrote this one?
Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops sang it. And as a matter of fact, we had a nightclub in the east side of Cleveland. It was called Leo's Casino and Quad Hall Lounge. It wasn't a casino. That was just the name. It was a nightclub. All top name entertainment. And I went to see the Four Tops, and as a matter of fact, Levi Stubbs sat at the bar with me before he went on stage, and he wanted me to kind of keep it quiet because he was having a drink before he went on stage with the Four Tops, and I says, I'll tell you what, let me get you a drink. So I bought him a couple of drinks before he went on stage, and we chatted a little bit at the bar. It was a lot of fun. I remember asking him, how's it, you know, is it kind of tough for you guys to be on the road all the time? And I'll never forget Levi Stubbs. He says, no, it's a groove, he told me.
Well, he certainly grooved. This is one of my favorite songs because it just puts you in a good mood. Now, we're going to play another song. I like this next song, too. A little trivia question. Who sang that one?
Oh, that was David Ruffin with the Temptations. And as a matter of fact, I was working, managing a hotel, restaurant, lounge, and David Ruffin was singing there, and I actually checked him in. So that's when I met David Ruffin. This was in Amarillo, Isle, North Carolina.
Oh, it's a wonderful song. Absolutely. Now, when you were, James, you put all these questions together. How did you do your research? Just went online and found your favorite songs and checked them out?
Yeah, Google it and research.
Okay, well, you know, this is a wonderful thing. What I really admire about you, you hadn't been, when did you start writing?
Actually, when I retired, I really got into it. It was back in 2000.
So this is an example, and I've told people about James before that this is an example. I mean, you retire, but if you've been interested in things in your life, turn it into a book. And James has certainly done that in a big way. I mean, you must have how many books now?
35 I'm working
35
on.
Books. And it's just so much fun to be able to write something, to see your words on paper, and then to know that they have an impact. Other people are going to read them. And it's just one way to keep your mind active when you retire. You don't want to retire and just sit and watch television all day. It's so wonderful. If you do this research, takes time, and if you join a writing group where you can learn the craft of writing or just do interviews with people that you know and find out what they like. And, for example, I know James was spent time just meeting Good Time Charlie here and listening to Good Time Charlie's stories. And that Good Time Charlie story you wrote about in which book?
I Know Stuff.
And It's a funny little book, and it's got all of Charlie's Wesley stories about all of the famous people that he met and over the years. And this is exactly what you can do. So if you think that you don't have your own story to write, look around. James found Charlie as a neighbor. He was your neighbor, right?
Yeah, he was my neighbor for 7 years. And then we used to meet at this club bar across from our apartment complex.
And next thing you know, James has turned this into a story. So this is a wonderful example of what you can do when you retire.
And yeah, this club bar is the International Commodore International Yacht Club. And the thing is, after we got back from the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll, we realized that our jukebox covered every artist. That almost 99% of the artists that we saw in the Hall of Fame are on our jukebox.
Well, that's
these
fantastic.
These songs that you know you're playing, we have them on our jukebox. That's what we do. We listen to them.
Well, it's wonderful. And this is where the Commodore Club?
Yeah, it's down near Honeymoon Island.
Near Honeymoon
it's
Island.
It's a not-for-profit club open to the public. You know, it's an internet. It's called the Commodore International Yacht Club, but it used to be on the water. It's not on the.
It's inland, but well, who cares?
Right.
The idea is there. And the best thing is if they have a wonderful jukebox, which is I love. Now, we're going to play another song. I'm just looking at Big Ed in the control room. He loves to play songs. The born DJ.
Well, I've got two lovers and I ain't ashamed.
Well, who sang that song? And then we laughed.
Oh, that was Mary Wells.
Mary Wells. And she was known as the queen of Motown because she was, I think, the first really big Motown.
Oh, she certainly was.
And it's funny, people don't recognize her name very much, you know, but she sang so many hit songs.
Oh, yeah.
And I think she has just a fantastic voice.
It was Smokey Robinson who wrote her songs, yeah, of the miracle, Smokey Robinson. He wrote hers.
Uh-huh.
Like, he wrote My Girl for the Temptations. He wrote My Guy for Mary Wells.
So So did you ever get to meet him?
Oh, yes. I've met Smokey Robinson. Smokey Robinson used to come to our nightclub in Cleveland, and they were almost like a local group. They were there all the time. And it was a very intimate nightclub. You know, he'd high-five us. Him and the Miracles would high-five us as they're going off the stage, you know, and they're... When the show was over, you know, they talked to us. They'd sit down at the table and talk to us. Yeah,
well, this was a wonderful club that had so many famous people coming through there.
It was wonderful. Marvin Gaye, we saw a couple of times there, and Chuck Jackson, and you name it.
Ray Charles,
Sam Cooke. Who else? The Chicago group. Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions, all the way to the Four Seasons, to James, Sweet Baby James Taylor, and James Brown. I mean, it was just everybody played there. And it was a very intimate club, like I say.
Well, I just think it's so wonderful to be able to bring to people some of these sounds for younger people who might not be aware of just the major, major influence that Motown has had on our culture. And it's still, you know, I lived in Detroit. I was born in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but it was when I was young, we moved to Detroit, to Highland Park, Michigan. And, of course, we were not too far away from where the birth of Motown. And, of course, now there's a museum there in the house where it all started. It's just amazing what beautiful, beautiful songs they have given us. I
did all my homework in high school, all this music, you know, Alan Freed, Cousin Brucey, you know, back then, you know, excellent music.
And the next song is one of my favorites, absolute favorites. And Big Ed? I love that song. Who wrote that? You know, I just have to say that this one is, because I think it's one of my favorites, it was sung, of course, by Barrett Strong. And he was the first artist. Did you realize that he was the first artist to have a record hit for Motown?
I didn't know.
Yeah, he's an amazing singer, and you know, he also wrote the song, so he's a singer-songwriter.
He, as a matter of fact, that song was probably the most played song in every venue or every local group across the whole country, you know, every little dance hall.
Oh, they played it.
Everybody played that, sang that song.
Well, it has an infection. I think the subject matter sort of grabs everybody, and there's all – many times in one's life when one thinks that way, money, money, money. And I think it's just a delightful song. And I can't believe this. Well, this is live radio. This is what happens. Oh, well, I have, you know, I always tell people, turn off your cell phone. And here I am. And now I should have actually, you know, one of the things is, I have been tempted. My son wanted to put on my phone the ring song. He wanted to put Crazy because That is my absolute favorite song. Mm-hmm. Patsy Cline's Crazy. And so when this is ridiculous. Okay, this is going to be funny. This is funny. Somebody is calling me and is persistent, and I have to turn this off because it's like, okay. I should have Crazy there because that Crazy would have been just perfect for this because I'm pretty crazy today anyway. Getting ready for lots of interviews. As I mentioned to you, this interview that I'm doing with you today is going to be on after my interview with Mary Higgins Clark on Thanksgiving Day. And Mary Higgins Clark, you mentioned that you had
I went to a book reading by her up in New York.
Uh-huh.
Unbelievably great writer.
Well, she is fantastic.
And her daughter, too. She writes with her daughter.
Yes, and very, very blessed to be able to write with your daughter and to be involved in that. And so, as I said, I'm having her on Thanksgiving Day because it is perhaps her favorite holiday. She has always just loved Thanksgiving, and I wanted to have her on. And so you're going to be after that. And as I said, one of the things to be thankful for are books and music. And you can't go wrong when you are listening to Motown because they are just, songs that stay in your heart and in your mind. And I know I'm not – sometimes I think, that they really have so ingrained us. I really hate when they take these songs and turn them into commercials on television for soaps and I don't know what. I resent it. I don't like when they do that. I know the artists and the thing make money when they sell these songs, but some of these songs seem almost too too perfect that they're used in commercials. So I don't know. You sometimes being a purist is difficult, but I do. Love Motown music. And I think, James, that you've done a terrific job in putting this book of trivia together.
Thank you.
And as I said, I highly recommend it. And in this area, one of the nicest trivia nights is at a place called West Shore. And they have two locations. And the West Shore on West Bay is a fantastic pizza restaurant. They have terrific pizza. I think the best chicken parmesan in the area. And they have a trivia night, and it's a wonderful place for everyone who's interested in trivia to go. And they should go to Amazon and look at check out James McGee.
Well, and, my website is La Trivia.
And what's your website?
La Trivia.
La Trivia. How do you spell?
LITT and then the word trivia. La Trivia. Two T's.
Okay, La Trivia. Well, there. That's ideal place to go.
Lit Trivia. LIT.
LIT. Lit. Lit Trivia. Okay, Lit Trivia, and because it's a subject that I think everyone, James covers all sorts of subjects, and he's going to come back on over the next few months and talk about his different books and bring us some more trivia. And we're just going to end with, let's end with one song. Let's end with the Popsicle song, okay? Or Sunshine. Let's do Sunshine, because it's a beautiful day today here in Clearwater, Florida. And then I'm just going to say bye to James and Wesley. And thank you so much for being in today. And we will have you back and talk more about music and about some of your other books. Okay, James?
All right, thank you.
So we're going to head out with this lovely song.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for coming in, guys. I really appreciate it. And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And these books, by the way, are all great for Christmas gifts.